A long time ago, on a comics page far, far away. Greetings and welcome to May the Panel Be With You, the Star Wars comic book show brought to you by the Punch-Up Entertainment Network. I'm your humble host, Mike Argoni, and joining me, as always, the living bioship to my man eternally trapped in a living bioship, it's John Campbell.
Hello, everybody. Argoni, I was promised an Empire Strikes Back adaptation, and Marvel failed.
You were lied to.
I was lied to, and I'm furious about it some 40 years later.
Look, it's fine, because at the end of this issue, they also promise a Empire Strikes
I'll
Back.
I'll believe it when I see it!
That's a good mentality to take in all things, John.
Oh, yes.
But especially where Star Wars comics are concerned.
God. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a weird one-off fill-in. I mean, this is like the definition of fill-in issue.
Yeah, no, 100%. This is, for those less acclimated with comics terminology, a fill-in issue is usually done in between larger story arcs in which the main creative team, for whatever reason, is unavailable, or there are delays in their workflow, or something has happened with editorial. Something causes a lapse in the monthly output of comic books. And so then the company scrambles to say, we need to put something out this month to maintain sales quotas.
Right.
Because as we all know, if something disappears for a month, we nerds will just forget it exists. We have no object permanence.
Well, it's interesting because it depends on the thing, right? Because then you have that's certainly the big two ongoing series model. But then you have stuff over at like Image where stuff will disappear for 2 years before it comes. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we've all read Saga, John.
Where basically anything Matt Fraction has done, that guy takes a lot of time.
Yeah, well, look, he's just finished making his biggest comic book ever, a TV show.
Yeah.
But yes, we are covering Star Wars, the original Marvel Comics Group Presents run of Star Wars from 1977. This particular issue, issue number 38, came out in August of 1980. And we have a wildly different creative team than we've had up till this point. Nary a sight of Carmine Infantino in this issue.
No. No Carmine Infantino. In fact, we mostly have one Michael Golden.
Michael Golden is credited writer, penciler, and colorist for this issue. So this is basically a one-man show. We do have Terry Kevin Austin on inks, with Archie Goodwin also getting a writing credit in here, with Joe Rosen on the letters.
Yeah, well, Goodwin is credited as writer. Michael Golden is credited as plotter.
Yeah, so basically, what that tells me is this was maybe done in a even more rushed Marvel style, where like the basic story beats of this were drawn out by Golden, and then Goodwin came in after the fact and added a bit of a word punch up, if you will.
That would be my guess. Yes.
But yeah, let's like right off the bat, let's take a look at this cover, because this immediately tells us we're in for a whole new rodeo here.
Well, it's just so weird to pick up an issue of this or to digitally click on it on the Marvel app and not find Infantino drawings of these characters. I mean, Michael Golden is a very different artist than Infantino. It's a million miles away.
I would associate Golden way more with what I would eventually come to know as like 80s and 90s Marvel House style in a lot of ways.
Definitely. I mean, he's on the up and coming, but he will be a huge artist in comics, both at Marvel and then later at DC as well. So absolutely. It definitely feels more like that. Whereas Infantino is a guy from the Silver Age DC sort of, I mean, his style feels outdated, I think, is a lot of what we react to. Nothing without talent. But no, there's definitely, this definitely feels more in line with this era, or what's going to be this era of Marvel. Because immediately... Yeah,
some people refer to it as like the Bronze Age.
Yeah, he's very much in that way, because just like his character designs are suddenly radically different. All the sharp angles are gone, replaced by quite the opposite. Instead of having these like furrowed brow, squinty-eyed people, everyone here is very wide-eyed. His style is almost to the opposite end completely.
Whereas Infantino is a very accomplished draftsman and like can clearly pump out like a lot of detail pretty quickly, even if that detail is repeated over and over again sometimes.
He's good at a couple details that he just keeps using, yes.
Golden has this more cartooning style
right.
that lends itself to like what we'd interpret as like 90s Disney kids as like an animated style.
Absolutely, which leads to, I think, one of the things I like about that is it leads to more expression in the characters, right? Then sort of we talk about that Infantino sort of defaults to often very scowly looking characters.
Where very angular, very like... It looks like they're angry because their eyebrows are so sharp.
Right. Whereas, like I said, it's quite the opposite. Everyone is... The eyes are big and open and expressive in Golden's art.
In last issue of this book, Han Solo just didn't have eyes.
Just stop drawing them, man. What do we need them? But yeah, look at this cover. It's Luke and Leia trapped in a living starship, riders in the void, and this starship is all over Princess Leia.
Yeah, okay, let's not beat around the bush here. There's some tentacle stuff going on here that
is ever.
Look, you gotta sell books, I guess, and in the early 80s, that was when a lot of the deep nerd sect was beginning to get exposed to Japanese animation in a big way. Like, you have things like Akira beginning to leak over. You have things like some of the early Gundam animations beginning to leak over.
Oh my.
There is a transposition of Japanese animation culture beginning to seep over. Definitely. Now, I'm not going to say that just because Leia is getting wrapped up in tentacles doesn't mean that this is a direct one-to-one influence thing. I'm just saying having it on the cover of your comic is indicative of an aesthetic choice.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, and
the princess character being captured by a monster is as old as time itself. It goes back to King Kong in terms of, like, posters and covers of things.
I mean, and I'm not saying that any of this looks like Japanese drawing necessarily, but it definitely, Golden's art is closer to that. I don't know if he's actually inspired by any of that, but it's certainly leading to that more expressionistic, cartoony sort of style that we associate with Japanese comics animation.
Sure, and with manga and anime, like, you take that expressive cartooningness that I was talking about, and you take that to its, like, most extreme when you get like the big eyed magical girl Sailor Moon, and even Sailor Moon's pretty tame in compared to some of the like mega deformed their eyeballs are half their skull kind of chibi looks that you can get sometimes,
which is oftentimes what turns people like me off of anime. A lot of times that is just that it's just a distaste for the style, which is offense to it.
Yeah, and obviously this isn't that.
No.
But we draw the comparison mostly because Princess Leia is wrapped up in tentacles.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would be thinking that if that wasn't the case. But now it's like, if I see that, then the rest of it spins out.
To Golden's credit, I don't think the art itself isn't done in a like salacious manner.
No. No, certainly not. It's still very much in the Flash Gordon-y, you know, space opera movie serial sort of manner, right? Where, oh dear, what trapped by this, you know?
But we're focusing on that when maybe we should be talking about the golden robot with the lightsaber coming up behind Luke. What's up with that?
What's up with that, and why is it green?
Why is it green? Why does this robot look like if C-3PO had a child with the Predator? I don't know. These are all questions we might have answered.
Hey, man, that relationship was tumultuous, but oh so hot. 3PO and the Predator, man.
They were star-crossed lovers, to be sure.
Absolutely. Let's turn the page here and open up to, immediately it's just so shocking immediately when we're so used to Infantino. Even look at this planet. And also, Golden's the colorist on this as well. And so the colors feel interesting that more modern.
The colors feel a lot more modern. It feels like, I mean, this is clearly a guy who's doing all of his own stuff outside of the inking. He's doing the colors. He's doing the pencils. He's doing the plotting. Like this auteur comics making can really shine sometimes when it's one person kind of like at the helm of this thing. And I think it does in this book.
It definitely does. The just the weirdest thing about this is it just is this jammed in story, right? Like it's not like, it's seeing a guy who's newer on the scene and exploding with creativity, but hemmed in by having to do, as a lot of people do, like a fill-in issue. But you can feel there's a different vibe happening here than two, you know, old timers, veterans of the industry who normally do this book.
There are two wolves wrestling at the heart of this book. One is the creativity of Michael Golden.
Yeah.
The other is the commercial success of a Star Wars.
Right. Well, because there's no question.
The weirdest part about this book isn't all the weird shit we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
It's the fact that it is also taking place in Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. No, there's a guy whose brain is spinning off. And then probably Archie Goodman is going, bring it back. All right. Mm-hmm. We need a fill-in issue of Star Wars because we're not ready to ship that Empire book yet.
Yeah. Because, like, we'll get into all the weirdness of this, but, like, this really does feel, the story in this issue feels like something out of 2000 AD or, like, some kind of heavy metal, I think was what I was most thinking of. Nope. Some kind of anthology comic.
There's some, and we'll talk, I'll talk about, like, Michael Golden's clearly an alien guy, too. Alien. Because distinctly, we get some designs later that are so alien.
Yeah, there's a moment in this book where you're just like, well, that's just the engineer from Alien.
Yeah. So yeah, we open up Luke and Leia are under attack by TIE fighters.
Yeah, ordinarily, a lone space tanker plying the outer world trade routes is a small concern to the Empire. But ordinarily, such a tanker doesn't have its holds lined with medical supplies bound for the Rebel Alliance, or two prominent members of the Rebellion at its helm.
So I like that we jump right into this with no indication of, because this has nothing to do with any plots we've been following or leading to Empire. It's just like, here you go, folks. Boom. Luke and Leia on a medical supply mission at some point somewhere during the events of Star Wars.
And honestly, I really like that because one of my complaints about the stories thus far that has taken place between A New Hope and Empire, as told in this comic, something we've complained about often is the treading of water.
Yes.
And the way in which, like, events never seem to move forward in any way. And obviously that's purposeful. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, as of last issue, they still had not gotten off of Yavin 4. The Rebel Alliance had just left.
Boy, man, they just to the absolute last moment, they're sticking with that.
Yeah.
I think in some ways, if the whole book was like this, where it was just like ancillary stories that aren't totally contingent on continuity and where they fit in, it would probably be a better comic. It's just like, here you go. Here are side stories of Star Wars. And I think that's more what we see from tie-in comics now, right? Like, there's sort of an art to figuring out where you can slot in a story into an existing property.
One of my favorite parts of that initial, like, run of newer Marvel Star Wars books that do take place between A New Hope and Empire is the fact that the writers knew they had an endpoint. Okay, we need to end up on Hoth. How do we get there?
Right.
And so there is this culmination of this story of just like, okay, we immediately abandon Yavin. Now the rebels are on the back foot. They're on the run. They're trying to put stuff together. You have that whole arc with that mining world that, like, Vader is, like, manipulating the leader of, and the rebels are trying to, like, amass their fleet nearby, and there's all this betrayal and backstabbing, and eventually that leads to, like, okay, we can't establish a known planet as our base of operations. We have to go find this shithole ice world in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, the thing about it is, and it's very tough, and I think that's in some ways, and this isn't fair because I know the difference, but it's very hard not to view that first Star Wars run from Marvel when they got the license back, as the better version of this comic, right? Like, it's very hard. And I understand that the sandwich services are, they know where it begins and they know where it ends. Like, you definitively know we can't get, whereas here, they're just sort of like driving in circles until they're told where they can go next by the movie.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't realize quite, it would have been nice if the movies have maybe given them some hints of where they were going so they could at least start to seed in that direction. I think that's the other thing, too, is now when we see tie-in stuff, there is much more collaboration there, or at least knowledge of trying to make a multimedia property. So there is more of a sense of, like, if our comic is set between this movie and its sequel, well, when they're developing the sequel, they might at least let the comic book people in on some thread so it can go in that direction and be cohesive.
You say that, but, like, we oft bring up also that comic book Shattered Empire, which came out just before, like, Force Awakens, that we all thought, like, oh, maybe this is setting seeds, and there's this weird force tree, and what's Luke and Leia up to, and, like, oh, maybe this is setting the stage, and none of it had anything to do with anything.
Is that anything to do with anything, period? Because I don't know if have the force trees or any of that ever been picked up by anyone?
The only continuity that I'm aware of that has been continued from that book is the existence of Poe Dameron's parents.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like, okay, when I saw Force Awakens, I was like, okay, so none of that matters. But then I'm like, well, are there going to be more comics with it? Because it seemed to be threading to something. No.
Yeah, no.
No.
But anyway,
all right.
We start with somebody shouting, Luke, we've been betrayed. This never comes back up.
No, I don't know what that means.
Because, yeah, on the next page, we cut to an interior of this ship. This ship, which is, I don't even know what it is. It's some kind of freighter.
They say it's a spice tanker. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Again, Frank Herbert very generously not suing anybody.
He could, though. Let it be known. Anytime he wanted to, he could have, but he was a nice enough guy.
Yeah. We cut to an interior. We immediately get a whole new version of Luke and Leia looking like, well, honestly, Luke and Leia.
Yeah. Even though they're more cartoony, there is more of a feeling of continuing the it's not that the likenesses are dead on, but they're more expressive and feeling like Luke and Leia. It's something comic books can do. It's a weird thing and tough to explain.
It's caricature, right?
Yeah.
It is, you're taking qualities that people focus on and making them larger, making them more prominent. And while it does distort reality and, like, a person doesn't look like their caricature,
right,
it does create this sense of recognition in people that you can go, oh, okay, I know Patrick Stewart is bald, so if I see the caricature of a big shiny head man with a Starfleet uniform, I can know that be Patrick Stewart.
Right, and that's what I think Golden is doing that Infantino never really was. Infantino is like, now you're going to look like an Infantino character.
Yeah, basically. Like, I think Luke's haircut's a little bit easier to look at here. I think Luke's still, like, the messier of the two, but Leia has, like, more of the cherubic face that definitely had in the earlier films.
My God. I mean, it's just nice to see her not scowling. She's the most unpleasant character in this comic because it's impossible to read her dialogue in a not shitty manner when she's literally got her eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yes. So they're escaping from, once again, these TIE fighters.
Yeah, they say they've been betrayed by some smugglers who let them have these supplies at a bargain, and obviously that's because the Empire knew about it. They're dodging some TIE fighters. Luke's trying to pull some fancy maneuvers, because when isn't Luke trying to pull some fancy maneuvers?
Classic Luke.
But they've been hit on their rear shield. Something is exploding inside the cockpit, and Luke says, we're going to punch it and hit into hyperspace.
Yep. We're making the jump, and right now that's all that counts. And yeah, just immediately, there's just a lot going on here. I love this shot from inside the gunner shooting at them.
Yeah, no, I really like the dynamic panel layout here is something we haven't really seen in a Star Wars.
That's the thing is like, it's, I don't, when we say this, it's like, I'm not trying to shit on Infantino, but he is of the previous generation. looking, going from him in the last issue to Golden here, you see a stark difference in the generations of comic book artists. All of this feels more modern, and it's just like, this is the guy with the new bag of tricks, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's just, you know, again, I don't fault Infantino for drawing the same way he did in the 1950s.
But he's, not to say stuck in his ways, but definitely like, look, I've got my style. I know it works.
Yeah.
It will convey panel to panel a story that we're trying to tell. And
especially
it's that, never not worked, so why change it?
Right. That's the thing. And that's often why sometimes older people in the arts can stagnate a little bit. There are plenty of examples of people who don't, but that is generally what can be the problem.
Yeah.
This is how we use to do things.
Moving on to this next page.
Yeah.
Suddenly everything's going wild because Luke spoke too soon, because they were hit. When they go into hyperspace, things start shaking apart. And I really like this idea that, like, okay, if you go into hyperspace and something's wrong, hyperspace itself is so extreme, it can shake your ship apart.
That is a really interesting idea. And then they end up in the void.
In the void. Yeah, Luke saying, that hit we took definitely affected the hyperdrive. We've jumped way too fast and much too far.
Mm-hmm. And they're in the void. Now, is this a Star Wars thing, the void?
I mean, it's a reality thing, John.
Well, I understand it's but I'm talking about the idea that hyperspace can send you into this void.
Yeah, no. I mean, we even deal with this a little bit in the newest Ahsoka show. That there's this gulf between galaxies where there's just nothing. And if you fuck up hyperspace and end up in the void, you have almost no way of navigating back.
That's certainly what I immediately jumped to, right? Is the Ahsoka or the stuff that's in Rebels. I mean, sort of like the space between spaces, right? Kind of stuff, right? That kind of, you know, which is not to quote Crystal Skull, but
well, and it's this idea that, like, once you get beyond your navigation signals, with the technology they currently possess, it just becomes a near impossibility to find your way home.
Well, because it has that thing about, like, where are you going? What are you in when you're in hyperspace, right? Like, sort of a thing. Like, you're now transcending. You're right. You're sort of, that's the folding of time. You know, Event Horizon explains this, right? You punch through. Just listen.
In Star Wars specifically, I don't know how actually, you want me to go on this.
Well, as always, deep enough that we don't lose the mainstream audience.
Okay. In the Star Wars universe, hyperspace is like basically a different reality that ships drop into to circumnavigate distance.
Yeah, it's like a space highway, right? Like,
basically.
Yeah.
And that's why there are like safe hyperspace routes that people follow. Because like if you calculate it wrong, you bounce through a star or find yourself going through a supernova, as Han says in the first movie.
It's not the where Star Trek is about. It's a warp bubble that's like cutting through space, basically. More like the Event Horizon thing I was talking about. And actually, Marvel does this too, where they have the jump points and stuff, right? That you're basically entering a place that'll come out another place.
Yeah, and again, there are those safe highways, and why Han's Kessel Run is so like impressive in Solo is that he is basically taking a shortcut. He's off-roading off of the highway and says like, no, it'll be faster.
Right. Yeah.
But that's because the Empire set up a blockade on that highway.
Exactly. So they're now caught. Their engines are down and they're just in nothing. There's no stars or anything. They're just in black.
Yeah. Until Luke's like poking around trying to fix things, and Leia points out that there's one star that is showing up nearby. How creepy would that be to just
it's
like
really
be in black
creepy.
And then a light comes
single
on.
Single light. I know. This is certainly like you're talking about, this is a cool sci-fi setup. It doesn't really fit with the aesthetics of Star Wars, what will eventually happen, but it's cool science fiction storytelling. It's more like something you'd get in an anthology book.
Yeah. Because right on this next page, we get into just how much this really doesn't fit into Star Wars as the space booger approacheth.
Here it comes, yeah. Jack Kirby, I had to look. Did Kirby do this? No. It's more in that vein of his oft-mentioned 2001 A Space Odyssey comic, which is weird as hell.
Yeah, so we get a little bit more into the horror aspect here is in this top left panel. Suddenly the ship's communicator crackles to life and we get creepy laughter kind of echoing in their ship.
Yes, which is it's so weird.
Oh, it's super weird. Even weirder is the giant mucus bubble that suddenly dominates the page as this star that Leia saw suddenly shoots towards them. And as it approaches, it resolves into, I mean, I called it a booger before, but like, I really don't know how to describe this thing.
That's pretty accurate. If you're just listening to this, whatever you're picturing is probably right.
It's a big green bulbous. It seems to be made of like differing sized spheres that are all layered on top of each other, like a weird 90s screensaver where the bubbles would sort of just like appear out of each other and fractal in geometric shapes. It's got like some fungus qualities to it. It's got weird organelles kind of like dangling off of it. It's a weird looking thing and doesn't look like anything we've seen in Star Wars.
No, or will ever see in Star Wars, really. It actually looks more kind of like a Star Trek thing where you would run into like a space bean or, you know, there's more like, sure. Yeah, weird. There's much more weird shit like this over in the Star Trek franchise.
I just watched an episode of Voyager where Janeway had to punch her way out of a nebula that was giving birth.
Oh, I remember that episode. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's stuff like that. There's the space jellyfish and the pilot of Next Generation. I mean, there's all kinds of
stuff.
So anyway, they're pulled in. Oh, God!
Manner of crystalline entities.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And so this thing, as we turn the page, just... which I imagine is the sound.
Yeah, so it seems like one of them, I don't know if it's Luke or Leia, seems to be swallowing us. Presumably it's Luke, I guess, because he gets cut off on the page before.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, like, the green booger open up and, like, tendrils come out and, like, swallow the freighter they're in.
Yeesh. I think as we talk about it, the closest we get to this, to something like this, is the asteroid slug, which is called...
Exogorth.
There you go.
but even that's like, that would be like if the asteroid itself opened up and like swallowed the Millennium Falcon. That's what I'm saying.
It's like the closest we get to like sort of a space bean thing like this that's a larger organism. Or actually, you do get the creatures that are in the Solo, the Kessel Run sequence. There are like space creatures.
Oh,
that are,
like, yeah, organic. The thing that lives in the maw.
Right, yeah, these sort of organic things that are part of space and larger than our ships and stuff like that. But there's not a ton of stuff like that in Star Wars. And of course, then you get
the Purgle and yeah.
But so anyway, they get pulled into. Well, they've been swallowed by this organic thing, but why this seems to be the cargo hold of a ship they find themselves in?
Yeah, so we get this great bit here. I love this bit of comic book storytelling where we see the panel where the ship is being swallowed. We cut to a panel where it's just Luke and Leia's shocked, stunned faces. And then we cut out to a wider panel of this weird techno-organic hangar bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing I'm thinking about as I was reading through this last night and thinking about the micro... Did Archie Goodwin come in just to add his little narration pieces? Because that feels the most Archie Goodwin in here. And also, I noticed there's much more sparseness of, like, the warps and bloops and, like, sound effect things or thought bubbles to this than there normally is in this comic. But the thing that feels very Archie Goodwin is that, like, for a time, they stare in silence. Then, trained in instinct, snap them back. Even with their main power shut down, limited readings can be made. Like, that feels like a tendril back to the past. Like I said, one of the big things we see that shifts as we go into the 80s and guys like Frank Miller, John Byrne, stuff like that start to take over is less reliance on words, right? And more using the art to tell the story. It's certainly where you get more writer artist like Michael Golden.
Sorry, I just had to look up the name of the creature that lives in the maw in Solo.
That was just eating away at you that you didn't have that on hand.
It was. I needed it now. Locked into my brain. Yeah. It is called the Summa Verminoth.
Oh, God. They don't say that in the movie, right?
No, not once.
I was going to say, because that doesn't even sound familiar. That's from a visual guide or whatever, I'm sure.
I don't exactly know where they source that name from, but it big.
Yeah. Oh, it very big.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they walk in here, but and of course, like all space stuff like this, they're like, we can breathe the air.
Yeah, of course. You're talking about like the lack of words and some of this stuff, and it really does feel like this is, like you said, Archie Goodwin just swooped in after the fact to add some words so he could get a paycheck this week.
But they knew that this issue, because it doesn't feel designed, makes that stuff stand out even more and makes it feel more old-timey in that sense.
Because honestly, like, for every page, and this is something I did while reading this book after I sort of figured out what was going on, just ignore the dialogue or the captioning, and you can... This story basically can be told without words.
And that's I think, is a big thing that separates between when we go from the Silver to the Bronze Age, right? Like, more reliance on the art to tell the stories, more faith in that people who are reading comics are wanting to do it because... The visuals are, if anything, the backbone of the story, as it would make sense. Totally. Since it's a medium based on pictures.
But we get a little bit of back and forth here between Luke and Leia saying, like, this machinery in here looks organic. And Leia saying, it looks like it has grown here. This place practically pulses with life of its own. Imagine being inside a, like, car garage. And the walls, like, pulsing.
Yeah, I know.
Like, right? How disturbing is that?
This is cool. This is cool, weird sci-fi stuff that I love. Like, I do really dig this story, even if it's not quite Star Wars-y, but just as a fan of science fiction. It's very cool.
We got Leia out here on this next page being like, look, maybe this doesn't speak well of me as a professional, but I just have a bad feeling about this.
I can't blame her. This is just Luke, I'm sorry, Luke, it's just too weird. It's just too goddamn weird.
Luke, I don't think we're in a Star Wars anymore.
Yeah. Seem to have ended up in some kind of other science fiction franchise or something.
We'll talk a little bit about Warhammer 40K here as soon as we figure out what's going on this ship.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some Warhammer influences here.
Was Warhammer, was that around at the point?
That's a great question. What I'm going to look up.
Because Warhammer, I mean, goes back further than one might think, maybe.
Yeah, because it was like an English thing for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's see. When was it first published?
That's what I'm...
The first edition of the game didn't exist until 1987.
Okay.
So we're still years out from 40K specifically existing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Warhammer is a world I know.
Because the original Warhammer, the fantasy version of it,
right,
is from 83.
Warhammer is something I don't, because it's just not in the kind of thing I would, but I always love the aesthetics of it. I'm excited to see this new, like, universe of movies and shows, because I like what I know about it.
I think if you like things like Judge Dredd or RoboCop, there is a lot of stuff you'll like about specifically Warhammer 40K, mm-hmm, because it is this like grim, dark, overwrought, kind of sarcastic look at like brutal combat in the future.
Yeah. Rawr. Yeah. No, it's always appealed to me. It's just like a lot of the way people engage with it is not stuff I would want to do. The miniature games and stuff like that are just not things. But anything I've ever seen from it seems badass. And the like, I've seen some of the animations and some of that stuff, mm-hmm, and all that stuff rules. So I'm excited.
We'll get into the comparisons I have with that here.
Well, anyway, more
first the floor has to eat them.
Yeah, after more sinister laughter.
But like, the laughter seems to flow all around them, and then the madness begins. But this
is kind of what I'm talking about. That middle panel with the ha-ha-has is so different and so much more artistically interesting than just like the blorps, bleeps, bloop, bleep, zip, zaps that we normally see in here. It's designed into it. It's more haunting, right? Like, it's more like he's, once again, the laughter seems to flow all around them. Do we need that when they are literally surrounded by the ha-ha-has?
And specifically, not to get like too art school about this issue, but this particular page, I think, does a very interesting thing with the comic book grid, right?
Yeah.
Because the 9-panel grid is like the classic deconstructionist, like optimal way of like telling a sequential story on a page that one might determine if you only study like basic comic book layouts, right? Right. And that's like what Watchmen is deconstructing and
right.
all that stuff.
Yeah, Tom King's obsessed with it now as well too, right?
Yep. So you have a 6-panel grid here, and specifically the bit in the middle with all the laughter is in the gutter. It does not have its own panel. So it like exists outside of space and time in a way that is like very much on purpose, and that's why I think it's very good. You have the ha 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 ha's spread across the entire width of the page inside the gutter, and suddenly our characters find themselves surrounded by that laughter inside this gutter as well, in between the actual panels. And so yeah, the like Archie Goodwin's little the laughter seems to flow all around them feels unnecessary, because in that liminal space between the panels where it's just the two characters and the laughter, that's all there is.
Absolutely. And it's great. It's great visual, artistic storytelling. And then Archie Goodwin is like, I better put some words in here.
Because then the madness begins as the floor eats them.
Yeah, like, and then the madness begins is an understatement for what I'm looking at visually.
Because first, the floor, like, puckers around our two heroes' legs and sucks them through the floor. Yep. Luke is deposited into a grayscale anus as he is blorped out into a chasm, and Leia finds herself on a fun slide down into a ball pit.
I did notice this, like, Leia gets it. This thing definitely has a preference for Leia, because it just lets Luke land hard, and Leia's like, you get a slide. But Luke is going to slam into whatever, like, this... Ugh, God, more like gooey stuff. Anyway, let's go to the next. So Leia's like, all right, I just went down a slide. I don't know what's going on, but let's go here. And then as Leia of this comic does, she starts blasting.
Well, look, remember those tentacles we talked about on the cover? They're going to show up right now. And instead of grabbing Leia, Leia's going to fucking gun them down.
Leia kills so many people and things in the comic, and it's one of my favorite things about this comic. This is a shoot from the hip Princess Leia.
Yeah, look, I can enjoy Leia just going absolutely berserk from time to time, and I'm here for it.
And so, like, then Luke falls onto what is like an organic cushiony.
He finds himself falling onto a beanbag chair full of Jell-O.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And once again, must we have the words? The fall ends as all falls must, with impact. Cushioned, but all the same, stunning. Fuck off.
Still, he is young, his body is strong, and his senses are honed by the ways of the Force.
Yeah, God. God. Can't resist, man.
Again, just imagine each of these pages without any of the words on them, and I think the story still is told exactly the same.
Yeah, and I would say actually much more impactfully, actually. I'm somebody who is always wanting less words in comic. I mean, it really depends on what the comic is, but for the most part,
sure,
I like a comic that moves from panel to panel. So I talked about this a lot. When I go back to older comics, a lot of the time I'm like, why is it taking so long to get through this comic? It's like, oh, because it's dense with words.
And sometimes you need to do that, but and it'll, sometimes it'll, all those words can make the like quiet moments all the more impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shrack, though, as something happens.
What's this? A lightsaber? What's this? Oh, this droid isn't gold at all. Yeah. So it's the droid from the cover.
Nor is his lightsaber green. I mean, the colors are all different.
Look, all lightsabers are pink, John, until otherwise stated.
Luke has a blue one here, though. Luke does properly have his blue lightsaber in this comic.
True. Because, yeah, we have this weird, like, insectile droid coming in with a pink lightsaber, and it's speaking basically to itself as it attacks Luke.
Yes. And it's basically testing him, like, fascinating that it would, yes, interesting move. Like, you get the sense it's sizing him up for some reason, right?
But it's also speaking in, like, broken sentence fragments. It seems to, like, not be all the way there, as it's, like, fast reactions. I like that. Good. Good. Challenging. Make it interesting. Like the saber, too. Fun. Analyzing it. Duplicating it. Good touch. Too bad it's all over. So, killing stroke blocked? Not sure. That's fair. So many variations at once. It's kind of like...
Yeah.
It reminds me of the, like, early dialogue of Warlock, that New Mutants character.
The
techno-organic character.
Well, which, it's a cool, very effective alien way to write a robotic or synthetic character in some way, right? Like, there's just this thing where it's just speaking very clipped and, succinctly, without much... it's not speaking like... a human being that's just going like, analyzing, thinking, what? It seems like he's just bouncing around.
I mean, eventually we'll find out that this isn't a droid talking here. This is
right
a person, which makes it all the more unsettling.
Yes. This whole thing is unsettling, which is cool.
Yeah. but this droid seems like very confident in its ability to take down Luke. Luke is trying to talk this thing down, being like, we don't have to fight. What are you doing? And this thing is alluding to how fun this is and how, like,
the
complexity of this engagement is some kind of game.
Yeah. Which is disturbing.
The action, I think, is pretty well conveyed on these bottom four panels here. The swinging and clashing of the lightsabers, I think, is very well done.
Absolutely. It's so refreshing. It makes me upset that we're not going to keep Michael Golden, because his art is so dynamic and fascinating and just creative. And it screams of, if not necessarily youth, of somebody who's just jazzed. Whereas you have a real workaday guy doing it with Infantino, who, like I said, I'm not shitting him, but I don't think he was like, yay, Star Wars. It's more like another book, whatever it is. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a guy who's like, I'm doing a lightsaber and the clashing and the explosion of the yellow light and sparks coming off of the blades as they hit. And I love the swooping line. Like I said, it's just the action is dynamic in a way.
This next page, when we have the kill stroke from Luke, we have another one of their clashes. We have a swoop pass, and we have this classic, like, samurai moment of the sword goes past, and then the explosion happens behind
it. God, it's good. I know. It's just, yeah. I mean, this is the most exciting lightsaber fight we've seen in this 1977 run of the comic.
Yeah, I think so. Though we've seen, like, painfully few of those.
This is true. I mean, because once again... The book is sadly designed in a way where a lot of force users with lightsabers can't fight due to we don't want to infringe.
Not existing. Yeah. So we have this interior monologue from Luke. I'm glad he's not like just like talking to himself and he's actually just thinking this.
Yeah.
He's thinking like this robot is analyzing me. It's adjusting. I have to make this quick or else because it keeps getting better with every clash we make.
Right.
And then Archie does a weird thing here, and I'm not quite sure what the implication is, or if this is the colorists doing. I'm not quite sure, because in the captions and as Luke dispatches his droid, say, hesitation, suspicion of deceit, no longer than a heartbeat, but long enough for Luke to whirl and win. And then suddenly the caption box changes colors to red and black as it says, the droid dies, and then... switches back to yellow and black as it says, but the voice which spoke through it still screams on.
Yeah, there's another red dialogue box on the third panel on the bottom, too.
Mm.
And I don't quite know why.
Yeah, I'm like, I was struggling to figure out why those in particular are highlighted in that way.
Right.
Is it just to, like, emphasize the violence that's being incurred there, because the next one is a breach opens to the vacuum of space because shit's gonna go sideways right. here real quick.
Right. But I just, I don't know. I guess, yeah, maybe there's supposed to be a more like active impact. Something dies, breath opens. I don't know. I would be curious to know what the thinking on that was and where that direction came from.
Because just at a base level read, it seems kind of random.
It is distracting too. Like, yeah. Because generally, once again, I like to think of a comic book as should naturally flow. When something like that happens, it's not generally a good idea for the reader to go, wait, what? Why is it?
Yeah.
It calls
your attention to stop and consider. Yeah.
Not in a good way, like a drunk piece of art can do. Well, so anyway, here we go.
Because that voice keeps talking. It says, impossible, impossible. It's not in the programming for you to win. Only if you're real, you exist. Enemies, enemies, enemies in the ship.
Mm-hmm. And then they get excised here, but they're pulled towards the airless void, as it says. We'll go to the next page and see Luke and Leia and
the spaceship
everything
is trying to fart them out.
Yep. Get out of there, man. This is upsetting my tummy.
This voice in yellow, presumably it's Deadpool, is
that is how I think, yeah.
Is shouting, out, out, I'm the ship. The ship must survive.
Yeah. Great, by the way, in case you were wondering if the ship is organic, the line, I am the ship, will seem to tell you that.
Yeah.
That's got, I'm gonna chalk that up to our old buddy Archie again.
I mean, I like the dialogue of who will eventually discover to be the pilot of the ship, who is sort of merged with the ship.
Yeah.
I think all of that's good. What I don't like here is Luke and Leia having a bunch of dialogue and thought bubbles while they're being sucked out into space.
Because once again, it's always, I feel like a lot of older comics, and Goodwin in particular, just because we're always focusing on his writing in this, is so focused on these moments where people are having very clear, like, thoughts while impossible death-defying things around them. And it doesn't make sense to me if I'm trying to follow a character. If they're
perfect example.
Yeah.
Start with the middle panel here. Mm-hmm. We have Luke. He's being sucked along this corridor by the vacuum of space, mm-hmm. dragging him out towards the exit of the ship.
It's painful because the text box is in red.
It's painful, but it succeeds as Luke like throws himself into a wall.
Yeah.
Specifically, Luke thinks to himself, that column, if I can angle my body toward it.
Yeah.
... He slams into the column. It's painful, but it succeeds. Then in this middle panel here, Luke has this whole internal monologue of air currents will hold me here as long as I don't move to no behind me. Next panel, it's Leia.
He says aloud. Yeah. He thinks no, and he thinks behind me, and then out loud says, it's Leia.
And then while she is sweeping past him in this corridor, he has time to say, this way, princess, twist this way, then I can grab your hand, as he grabs her hand.
Yeah. Luke, let go. You'll be pulled along with me. I won't let you die. Because you also have to imagine there's like this swirling noise of the, right? I mean, so it feels like, I mean, a lot of comics now, certainly we've gotten a lot more experimental with dialogue bubbles and stuff like that, but it feels like they should be in giant letters, like they're screaming over wind. It should be very much like, Leia, grab my hand, end of dialogue, or something like that. It's lessening once again. It's more, and I gotta put this on Goodwin because I'm assuming that's where this is coming from. It's not all of this could once again be done without the dialogue, and it would be infinitely more exciting and more like bam 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 bam. And instead, you're going like they're able to say that much while twisting through the air.
And look, I'm okay with a panel of them like holding onto each other, Luke struggling to maintain his grip on this column, and Leia saying, let go of me, you'll die too.
Yeah.
And Luke saying, I won't let you die.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's all the intermediary stuff of having time to think all of this stuff and say out loud like a paragraph's worth of words.
How long are they being pulled out of the ship for? My God, they have all day.
Yeah, they got all day. Thankfully, they got even more time, as on this next page, we have the sealing of a breach as Leia's still screaming at Luke, save yourself, please. Luke says, oh boy, I love you, Leia. I can't lose you.
Yep. I mean, that's nice. Yeah. That's a familial love. Oh, they don't mean it like that, though, do they?
No, they don't.
No, and I know he doesn't get that I love you back, so that's got to hurt.
Well, look, we know she's going to be having a rendezvous with a certain scruffy-looking nerf herder next
she's
movie.
Literally, so. She's literally, she will say, I love you to a different guy, and actually has already said it, probably, to the people reading this comic.
Yes, correct.
So you're reading this going like, bullshit. Yeah, so once again, so they're oh God, they're going to die, except they're fine.
They're fine. Forces strange and seemingly whimsical. In purple, this caption box here. I'm not quite sure what's happening.
No, I don't know. I don't understand.
Because Leia falls to the ground. Luke, like, lets himself off the pillar. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the screaming, horrible voice of the ship says, you care for each other. I had forgotten about such caring. I've forgotten many things.
That could have used another pass on the dialogue, I think. I like what that's saying, but it's a little awkward. And not in the way they want it to be.
Yeah. The idea that, like, the ship has seen their care for each other, and that has reminded it of something, so now it doesn't want to kill them.
Right. It's like, oh, I remember it is possible to care.
Can you show me love?
Yeah. But the other thing is, of course, I read that, like, because of the person I am, like, Superman 2. He cares for these people.
This is Zod.
Actually, that's Ursa who says that. But that's
One of the Zodlings. Sure.
Yeah, one of the Kryptonian fugitives. And then turn the page, and they've now abandoned the yellow backing for the ship's text.
Yeah, so I read this as once you can actually hear the person's voice and it's not on intercom, it's not yellow anymore. And that was my no prize for this.
Well, I agree with that, except for then that doesn't hold to the beginning of this.
Well, what if he's just next door?
Well,
what if he's right there?
I guess that's true. But like then he's attributed to, and I'm sorry, this is where they meet an engineer from Alien. I mean, it's not even a little bit.
Nope.
But it just is, you know, and that as much as I love Michael Golden, I will say he is just stealing that, and that's fine. It's a great design, and keep in mind that movie comes out in 79, so that's very fresh.
Yeah, and look, we've got, especially in this room in particular, we've got the weird webbing on the floor, mm-hmm. and on the ceiling that is very H.R. Geiger-y, and
very much. There's no question that if not specifically Alien, that's the aesthetic he's going for in this.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I gotta see, what did Golden work on? Because I wonder if Golden worked on any of the Alien books.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they find in this room, as the wall like peels back and summons them forward, Luke and Leia find a dude in a chair that has been like fused with it. He's wearing some kind of spacesuit, so his features are totally obscured and is just like stuck in this semi-reclined position at seemingly the controls of this ship.
Right. The ship, but once again, at the controls of the ship, it is this very cool idea that is very Geiger-esque, the idea that the biology of whatever this thing was has now become one with the technology of the ship.
Yeah, and the ship was of a piece that was even possible to begin with.
Yeah. Michael Golden never worked on an Alien book. He did do some stuff for Jurassic Park, though, that I'd be curious to see.
Oh,
but
I know there was a Jurassic Park book that ran for a while, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that's nowhere, because I believe that was Topps. Remember when Topps, the card company, had a comics publishing wing?
Mm-hmm.
I believe they had the Jurassic Park license. So it's one of those comics that just you can't track down. And I will say... friend of the show, Bob Schreck, who we had a great interview, if you go back into our archives, with, wrote some of that Jurassic Park comic.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. At this time, though, Golden was working on Doctor Strange, which I do associate him with that, which also makes
sense. I think he was doing Doctor Strange in, like, some Defender stuff, yeah?
Yeah, and we've talked about his... he did a lot of work on the Nom. He's coming off of... or he's probably right in the middle of Micronauts. He was also the main artist on, which I do love the Micronauts. He was all over the place. He was a mainstay at Marvel.
This has a Micronauts feel to it as well.
Yeah, I'm getting the pieces of where a guy like this would be drawing Doctor Strange or Micronauts. He definitely leans towards weirder imagery, more surreal kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah, because Luke and Leia are confronted by this navigator from Alien.
Mystery for DC at this time, too, which is very in this weird vein, too. Yeah. So they're talking about, what is this thing?
And he says to them, I was like you once before I became one with the ship, with the computer. But watch the screen. We'll show you how it used to be.
Previously on me.
Previously on this character who's introduced in this issue and we shall never see again.
And then when we get to this, let's get to his flashback where he talks about how basically war destroyed his society, right? Which I like. I mean, I get what they're doing, right? It's like, you guys are actively in a war and look at the cost of war that it did to me. The only problem being that none of this matters to the overarching story of Star Wars.
Other than just like, well, war is bad, right? Yeah. We can all agree on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's in line with Star Wars. It seems to be saying that. The Star Wars is not in favor of the titular Star Wars, necessarily.
At least none of our main characters are,
It's a necessary means to an end.
Because we get this backstory of this pilot of this ship was this ship was the last surviving piece of some galactic war.
Right, because...
In a different galaxy.
Yeah, that's even farther away.
Right, and they won, but at what cost? Because they came home and their enemies as one last retribution had dropped a plague bomb on them and it had killed their entire home world and everybody else on the ship.
Right.
And so he just ran as far as he possibly could, which was outside of the galaxy.
Yes. It gives me a slight Doctor Who vibe, right? Like Last Survivor of the Time War, that like, okay, the war is over, but everyone's dead, and now it's just me.
The dialogue here is, I fled. Someone had to survive. Otherwise, it all meant nothing. The plague could spread from planet to planet throughout my galaxy. I had to go beyond, outside the ship and I, riding through the void.
Yep. I mean, this, like I said, like you were saying, this is a great individual entry and an anthology comic.
Yeah.
But it can't have any impact on Luke and Leia specifically. I would almost rather this be two just rebel pilots or whatever who could actually like internalize some of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, what if this is like Wedge sees this and goes like, I'm fighting to stop something like this.
Yeah, that's great. But it's sort of like Luke and Leia are like, oh man, that's a crazy story. Anyway, back to, they basically get then back inserted into the, I mean, that's basically what happens here, right? They just get inserted back into the Star Wars continuity and go, wow, that was wild.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned 40K before, because we get some like power armor looking dudes in this. Oh. And there's definitely a like in the grim darkness of the 40th millennia, everything is war vibe to the flashbacks here,
which kind of I'm like, tell me more, weird space thing. I would read this comic book.
But we also learned that like he and the ship fused at some point, and in order to keep him something like sane, the ship's computers like exposed his consciousness to these like simulated games that are happening inside the ship over and over and over again. And Luke and Leia got caught up in those games, and that's why everything was trying to kill them.
Yeah. Yes. And great. Okay, sure. Like I said.
And then my no prize for why the dialogue color changed the page before goes out the window because his is back to yellow.
I don't know what. And I don't know, is that a is that coloring or is that lettering? I don't know who determines or is that Archie Goodwin script? I don't know who determines those things. And I don't think there's a consistent thing. It's probably different.
I think there's only like two comic books that I can think of off the top of my head where that even matters.
Well, now it's and I understand. When I talk about comics now, with the digital stuff like that, right? Everything can be done so much more intentionally. And so you just don't see weird inconsistencies like this, because not only can it be done more intentionally, if there's a mistake or something they don't want to do, you can just undo it. Where back then, we already colored it yellow, so I don't know what to tell you.
For all we know, this is a coloring error.
Right, yeah, it easily could be. It's like, you didn't color that yellow? Oh, shit, it's already shipping. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, what do you mean you colored it yellow?
Yeah. Why is that red? Well, I ran out of yellow. That's another thing, too. It could literally just be, I ran out of yellow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's red now. I don't know. Yeah, it's just weird. Anyway, cut to the funkiest looking pink Star Destroyer bridge.
Yeah, so this ship is heading back to a galaxy far, far away. Weirdly enough, the Star Wars galaxy doesn't really have its own name, so everyone just calls it the galaxy far, far away.
Because when they were talking about, I was thinking about that when they talk about, like, we're back in our galaxy now.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
It does. I mean, it's rare that it ever matters, because how often do we go to other galaxies?
So far, only the once that I know of.
Right.
There you go. Well, and we can talk about the Yuuzhan Vong later, but we'll not do that here.
Yes, we've had many a conversation about the Yuuzhan Vong, because they are still just expanded universe legend stuff.
Yes, point.
Yeah, correct. Nobody's tried to bring them into main continuity.
Nope.
And they are cool, but probably for the best. I mean, I'm not saying, once again, I'm always amazed at, like, Filoni and Favreau in particular, their ability to, like, pick and choose things. And there's probably a cool way to bring them in that could work. But, you know, we don't need to. We had our fun.
No.
Yeah. We had a lot of good times with them, folks.
Snot Rocket appears in a galaxy far, far away. And yeah, on the bridge of this Star Destroyer, which doesn't look like the bridge of a Star Destroyer we've ever seen before.
No, and these are none of the characters we know. This is just Star Destroyer crew we haven't seen before. And that's fine. I mean, because you've got to figure there's a ton of them.
But they're like, hey, that big blobby thing has been playing hell with all our scanners, and now it's suddenly here. And we get a sense of scale, finally, of how big this thing is. And it dwarfs this Star Destroyer.
Which is, gigantic. Because literally, as we've talked about, the very first shot of Star Wars is establishing how gigantic a Star Destroyer is. And then this close-up of Luke and Leia. I thought it was very nice of them to give William Catt from Greatest American Hero a cameo here. That's exactly what he looks like in that panel.
I know it is. It's just when you say it, it hit me, and I was like, "Wow."
Yeah, yeah. Or if you're listening to us talk about Stephen King movies on the IP Squad, William Catt also in Carrie. He's the nice one in Carrie. Hmm. And what does he get for being nice to Carrie? Kill.
Lit on fire?
Yeah. No, he gets killed by the bucket. The bucket drops the blood on her, and then when the bucket falls, it hits him in the head and kills him.
Got it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in classic Imperial fashion, they don't know what's going on with this thing, so they open fire.
Yep. It's weird. Kill it.
Well, all they know is, we're getting confused life readings, sir. And the communicator, there's laughter. Insane laughter.
I do actually like this Goodwin line of the Star Destroyer captain deals with the unknown in the same way in which the Empire handles most problems. Violently. That's good. That's good writing. And then it appears...
Bottom right panel.
It looks like they nuked the ship for a second there when it's just the white of the chaos of it. There's a couple moments. We mentioned the grayscaling earlier, too, where Golden is just doing a lot of stuff. Like I said, this is definitely a guy who wants to play with all the tools of a comic book. And this panel is that for sure, where he chooses these moments to really emphasize. I like this rendering when we go to the next page. This rendering, when it's not just all pink in the bridge, is much cooler, and it looks like the glowing red of their instruments and stuff on their face.
Yeah.
Much cooler. Got, like,
the underlight. Yeah.
Yeah, that this feels much more intentional than it was just like, I don't know, just make the whole thing pink in the last one. This is very cool. It's ominous. It's what I want the Empire to feel like. Like, their ships should not be comfortable. They should be dark warships.
And, of course, the Empire has... Scanner indicates that the thing is some kind of biomechanical organism, sir, capable of sealing off damage with fantastic swiftness. But, with a scattered, constant pattern of hits, we can overtax its recovery system.
I don't care what it is, just tell me if it's dead!
if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's. I think that's actually the motto of the Empire at this point, right? you've seen Predator. And then for the first time in a long time, it feels pain. This pilot where the ship ends and the pilot begins, who knows? But pain, computer. I feel pain. No fun in that. You're making it too real. Too real!
And Luke chiming in with, like, it is real. You've dropped into the middle of a war. Our war.
Yeah. This is our war, pal.
Yeah. Basically Luke's like, this is the Empire. They won't stop until we're all dead. And the ship / pilot is like, okay, I guess we're playing a new game now. And, oh boy.
But what shoots forth from a newly opened fissure, as we go to the next page, are definitely not toys.
They're like these weird, they look like cells, like single cells that are being released that are just like white and black Rorschach blobs.
The ship describes as antimatter pods. When they make contact with matter, there can be only one result, instant disintegration. And I love the straight up horror comic of these terrified Imperial soldiers.
Yeah, because we see these weird pods just absolutely annihilating a couple of TIE fighters. And then as they hurtle towards the Star Destroyer, there's this look of like, oh, God, we're all going to die.
Yep.
And they do.
And they, spoiler alert, they do. Yeah. And there you go. And the ship's like, and basically, the guy in the ship's just like, well, that's the end of that.
Over. All over now. You can safely resume your journey as I resume mine.
Yeah. And when we turn the page, the ship has been repaired, so it's all good.
It's all good, yeah. You're just going to burp them out and fly away.
Yeah, anyway, have fun in your sequel, guys.
Basically, the pilot is just like, look, I can't be in this galaxy because it reminds me too much of my galaxy, and I'm so far gone, and I can kind of realize that.
Yeah.
So the only place I can safely exist is out in the void between stars.
But they're not like, hey, can we get that antimatter technology by any chance? Because that would probably win the war for us tomorrow.
Yeah, but that's another one of those things where it's like, okay, you can't go introducing this apocalyptic, like, world-shaking, universe-destroying technology and have it stick around, right?
No. But that's also sort of the frustration of... That leads you back to, like... That's the frustration of this. There's some cool ideas, but you're like... But none of this has anything to do with Star Wars, really.
Right.
So...
And Leia's weird fucking expression on this last page was just like, well, I guess it all worked out in the end.
Does it? Did it? And laughter rises from the communicator. Perhaps mad, perhaps not. It is difficult to tell, for very shortly it is gone. Thanks, Archie.
Yeah, look, this book has a very much a burn after reading feeling of an ending. I was just like, well, what did we learn?
Let it happen again?
Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah. And there it is. Next, folks, the Empire is striking back.
Now, look, John, this comic book may be making promises that we can't cash.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't know if you know this, but there is still another A New Hope adaptation we need to cover.
Well, that's right. That's right. Well, this comic may be going to Empire Strikes Back, but we are going to go somewhere else. But before we tell you where that is, we want to make sure you check us out online and support us over on our Patreon page, which is patreon.podbean.com/punchup, where you can get cool exclusive bonus content as well as help support the channel, including all of our podcasts here at the Punch Up Entertainment Network. Once again, that's patreon.podbean.com/punchup.
Yeah, and of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, which we always say is the optimal way of enjoying this show, is you can read the comic along with us, and we'll, especially this episode, I think, will give you some real wild visuals that we've been talking about the whole time. Because as much as we try to describe comic books, it is still a visual medium. So join us over on YouTube. Leave a comment below. What's your favorite Deus Ex Machina in Star Wars? Because right now, Booger Ship, top five on my list. That's not gonna lie.
That's a good one, yeah. But yeah, make sure you do that. But yes, Gergoni, what are we doing next week? We're taking a detour into an alternate reality of sorts.
Yeah, look, there is a strong classic presence in comic books to ask the what if question. That's right. Marvel has a whole series just called What If.
Indeed.
Spun from the comic book of the same name.
Yep.
We have our Elseworlds stories over at DC. There is never not a good time to ask the question, well, what if things went just a little bit differently? What would happen? How do we follow those lines of logic? And Star Wars, to its credit, has had the same inclinations from time to time, and that includes the Star Wars Infinity comics from, well, originally Dark Horse. Now we're reading them through Marvel. But they are a recontextualization of the original three movies based on simple what-if scenarios. And our first one, right out the bat, we're going to do Star Wars Infinity's A New Hope, and it asks the question, what if Luke's proton torpedoes detonated just a little bit too early when he tried to shoot down the Death Star? And hijinks ensue, say that much.
Oh, the antics.
Yes, indeed, because we are covering Star Wars Infinity's A New Hope, issue number one next week.
Yep.
I can't wait. This is one of my favorite Star Wars books. I have loved the Infinity's books for a long, long time. I can't wait to talk about them.
I read them back when they first came out and have not revisited them since, so I'm excited to get back to them. But I do remember thinking they were very cool, especially in a time when it was like Star Wars. There wasn't a ton of Star Wars yet.
Right.
So, yeah,
I'm excited. But yeah, join us next week for that. In the meantime, I have been Mike Gergoni.
I'm John Campbell.
And as always, may the panel be with you.